Welcome to The Big Why, a series from Montana Public Radio where we find out what we can discover together. I'm your host, Austin Amestoy. This is a show about listener-powered reporting. We'll answer questions, large or small, about anything under the big sky. By Montanans, for Montana, this is The Big Why. Today I'm here with producer Nick Mott. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Austin. It seems like our listeners are endlessly curious about wildlife. And this time, a listener in Jefferson County noticed something fishy.
Truly, the wildlife stories never end, Nick. What were they curious about?
Well, I'm starting the story here. This is the beautiful, clear, bubbling headwaters of Big Springs Creek outside Lewistown. It's also the largest cold water trout hatchery in the state. Here, Montana hatches millions of trout. Thing is, the trout hatched here aren't only native species, things like cutthroat trout. Instead, they also hatch fish like rainbows and browns.
Right, and Montana rivers are known for rainbows and brown trout. I actually did a couple of stories earlier this year on trout being raised down in some Bitterroot Valley classrooms.
Yeah, well, even though anglers love to catch them and FWP hatches them, rainbows and browns are actually not native to Montana. Our listener wants to know, why do we value non-native fish like rainbows and browns so much in the state?
Wow, I actually did not know that rainbows weren't part of our native ecosystems back when those kids were releasing them in a pond near Hamilton. So how did they get here in the first place?
Let's rewind about 150 years to 1889, in fact.
Ah, yes, the year Montana became a state.
Exactly. At the time, fish like Yellowstone and West Slope cutthroat, bull trout, and Arctic grayling swam our streams. Native fish. But then something monumental happened. And to tell you about what that was, we have two guides for this fishing story.
Adam Strainer, I'm the Fisheries Division Administrator, a.k.a. the Fish Chief for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks here in Helena.
I'm Patrick Byerth. I'm the Montana Water Director for Trout Unlimited.
A Fish Chief and a Water Director. They definitely seem like the go-to guys for this question, Nick. So what happens in 1889?
It's the dawn of a whole era. That year, the very first rainbows and brown trout were plopped down into streams in the area in Yellowstone National Park.
And it was more of a Johnny Appleseed approach in the very beginning.
For decades that followed, fish introduction became the name of the game. There were fish trains.
Bring your bucket of fish on the train and we'll stop at every stream along the way and pour some fish into those streams.
Fish from across the country and the globe were getting moved around and placed into waterways where they'd never before been present.
They trade species. So we'd end up getting browns from Scotland and Germany, rainbows from the McLeod River down in California, and we exchanged grayling in return. And distributed grayling out across the world and cutthroat too.
I mean, it was very rudimentary. It was very simple, but in the end, very effective.
Huh. So people just started introducing fish by the bucket load into our rivers and streams then. Why did they do that in the first place?
One reason is just familiarity. It's what people were used to fishing for out east. Fish like brown trout also make for a really fun fight. At the same time, this was an era of all kinds of resource exploitation, logging and mining and the like. So as ecosystems were destroyed, stocking rivers was a way to make sure there were still fish left to catch.
They thought, well, we could just stock our way to maintain our fisheries and make these fisheries better. I love yellow perch. I'm going to bring perch in. I love bass. I'm going to bring bass in.
This goes on for decades. And as it does, rainbows and browns do really well. So this is really step one that puts us on the trajectory to the fish predicament our listener noticed. But Austin, the story takes a turn in the mid-1970s.
As so many things seem to do, Nick, tell us more.
By this time, rainbows and browns had become properly wild in many of our rivers. They were breeding and self-sustaining. And then along comes this young fish biologist fresh out of grad school, a guy named Dick Vincent. He started looking at the impacts of stocking on wild trout.
And Dick Vincent discovered that adding more hatchery-reared fish into a system actually suppressed the trout population. So Montana made this bold decision at a bold time in Montana history to stop stocking streams.
This was not a universally popular idea. Emotions ran hot.
A lot of people feared that if you stop stocking, all our fisheries will die off.
Somebody even sabotaged Vincent's trailer after a public meeting in Ennis.
Oh my. But this still went into effect, right?
Yeah. Even today, Montana only stocks places like reservoirs or alpine lakes with rainbows and browns. The trout in the Clark Fork near you or the Yellowstone near me, those are wild fish that migrate and reproduce on their own. Those trout hatched at Big Springs Creek I started with, they go to about 100 waterways across the state, but think lakes and ponds mostly.
Wow. With this complexity, Nick, I'm guessing this means that today, not everything's hunky-dory under the water?
By no means at all.
Non-native species pretty much have taken over large portions of historic native ranges of trout.
Fish like pike and bass are invasive, and they've taken over big chunks of water, too. There are very specific threats as well. Rainbows, for example, hybridize with cutthroats, diluting the gene pool. And today, native fish like cutthroats and bull trout are facing challenges that continue to mount.
And I know it's an unpopular thing to say, but it's the climate change that's happening.
They're very temperature sensitive, so as water warms, they lose habitat. Rainbows and browns, they can handle wider temperature windows. As we keep seeing more hot summers, hot water, and things like hoot owl closures, Biorth wonders,
how far up the mountain can they get before they run out of habitat?
A powerful question indeed for the future of our trout populations. But back to the rainbows and browns, it sounds like FWP has kind of accepted that they're just a reality now. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Unfortunately, a lot of them, once they're in a system, they're nearly impossible to remove from a system.
Navigating this tension between natives and beloved introduced fish is a balancing act FWP confronts head on.
That's one of the biggest challenges that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks faces in the state of Montana.
So are there other reasons we seem to place a lot of value on non-natives like rainbows and browns in Montana?
Well, the elephant in the room here is the economy.
Angling in Montana is worth $1.27 billion.
That's billion with a B, Austin.
And the vast majority of that, folks come to Montana to fish for rainbows and browns. That's what people come to the state of Montana for.
So how does the state manage for both natives and these popular non-natives then?
Over the decades, there's been a serious focus on improving habitat. That means reversing some of the damages of, say, historic mining. It means reconnecting drainages and getting more cold water into streams. This is stuff that makes things better for cutthroats, rainbows, and browns alike.
It's not a zero-sum game. It's not either cutthroat or rainbow.
There have also been efforts focused specifically on reestablishing populations of cutthroats. In fact, the state is working on a brand new management strategy for West Slope cutthroat trout in particular. Instead of managing populations drainage by drainage, they're zooming out with a new management strategy that will take a holistic approach to the native fish.
We really hang our hat on Montana's fisheries being the pinnacle of angling in the West because of our wild trout management and strategies.
So it's not all bad news when it comes to fish then.
Exactly, Austin. Biorth says the rivers today are certainly busier than decades ago, but
the good old days are actually probably not much better or maybe even a little worse than the present times in Montana fisheries.
Well, that is a nice note to end things on. Nick, thank you so much for all this reporting.
Happy to do it, Austin.
Now we want to know what makes you, our listener, curious about Montana. You can submit your questions online at bigy.org. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts and help others find the show by sharing it and leaving us a review. Let's see what we can discover together.